Welcome to From the Cold Corner. I'm Kelly Rodriguez, Editor-in-Chief of Refrigerated and Frozen Foods. On this episode, we'll examine the latest in high-pressure processing, or HPP, and packaging for refrigerated and frozen foods. I'm joined by Dr. Vinicio Serment, U.S. Applications and Food Processing Specialist at Hyperbaric, a designer and manufacturer of HPP machinery, and Gianni Holzen, Commercial Sales Director at Freshlock, a packaging company specializing in flexible and reclosable technology. Vinicio and Gianni, thank you for joining me. So, Vinicio, how does HPP benefit food and the refrigerated foods industry in particular?
Yes, hello, and thank you, Kelly, for having us here. My name is Vinicio. I work as an HPP food application specialist at Hyperbaric, HPP leading equipment manufacturer. And well, the benefits are basically the simple use and versatility. So with the same equipment, with the same technology, you can use high pressure to pasteurize, let's say cold pasteurized foods. This means eliminating foodborne pathogens, but it also uses cold water between 40 to 75 Fahrenheit, which is chilled or room temperature. And well, this also allows to have a maximize the retention of chemical compounds associated with the sensory and nutritional properties of foods. So we talked about versatility, that you can go anything with juices, meats, plant-based foods, not only dips, but actually very complex foods, ready meals, seafood, dairy, and we can just go on and adding to this list. And the main benefit, well, it can benefit both manufacturers because of its simple use, the versatility, safety, of course, and extended shelf life, with products going all the way to 90 to 120 days, depending on the formulation. And of course, consumers which perceive HPP foods as those with premium quality.
Okay. And you touched on this a little bit with the variety of products, but one of the first commercial uses of HPP technology was guacamole. But how is the use of HPP expanding today in the refrigerated food space?
Oh, for sure. It's guacamole what started it all, or helped to start it exploding here in the United States. The technology actually started in the early 1990s in Japan, but it was precisely this avocado guacamole industry that in the mid-1990s, late 1990s, helped the expansion along with meats. So actually, earlier this year, FDA just released a report, which was actually a two-year-long survey in which they took commercial samples, those samples that were identified with as processed with HPP. They did not display any presence of pathogens such as Listeria, Salmonella, whereas those that didn't have the HPP, they do have observed that these pathogens are present. And this is not going to stop anytime soon with, the United States, one of the main consumers, and the market just growing because it's a widely available fruit, or widely delicious fruit. It's also versatile in terms of the different dishes that you can prepare. And just to provide some numbers, that last year for Super Bowl Sunday, there was an estimate that 80 million pounds of guacamole were consumed just for the event. And again, it's as people get more familiar with this, it's also more widely available because HP helps to distribute to other areas where perhaps it wasn't present in the late 1990s. That it's now available, and when we just expect this market to continue growing.
And Gianna, you mentioned that you have some background with, particularly in the meats and cheeses as it relates to HPP. I wondered what your experience was, over the last kind of three decades, seeing the use of HPP evolve through the industry.
And thank you for the question. And yes, so I've been in the industry for a long time now, for over 30 years. When I started out in the meat industry and in the packaging industry, there's additives were the main focal point of extending shelf life. And then some of that moved into other factors like water treatment, high temperature treatments and things like that. As consumers have changed and the demand for more natural products and such have developed, now these additives and some of these other like heat treating and such have some effects to the product, where HPP allows for some of this to occur. For instance, hot water cooks will drive out moisture out of the package and also may affect texture, where HPP will allow that moisture to stay within the product and maintain texture. What I've seen the big push is as products demand for more natural type products with less additives and such have occurred, different processing methods have been required to make that happen. And HPP is a very good process to allow the extended shelf life while cleaning up the label of the food product.
And you obviously are coming at this now from a packaging standpoint. So how does HPP affect the food packaging? And what are some other factors to consider if you're going to use HPP in the manufacturing process? How does that affect then the packaging that the food will ultimately go into?
Yes, well, there's a lot of factors in that. First of all, it's a product type. Let's say you're looking at processed meats and such. Then you have to consider the type of packaging that's going to go in. How is a consumer going to be able to get into that packaging? And is that package going to have certain features like reclosability? All those things, along with the material type, will play a factor on how you work with HPP. An example is if you're doing lunch meat, the more headspace you have in that package can have effect on the seal quality of that product. One of the factors that we see with, like, for instance, lunch meat is these usually use what we call a peelable structure or peelable structure to get in the package without having to use a knife. These sealants types do react to the high pressure. And unless you don't have a lot of headspace or use different types of sealant layers, like ionomer versus linear versus PE, can affect the appearance of those seals and things like that. So the packaging type along with the application do have to match and with the product. So all those things go hand in hand. If somebody brought to me an opportunity with a meat packaging, I would say vacuum package without headspace, and you could use a variety of different sealants without having any issues. If you said, I want a lot of headspace, I might drive you in another direction as far as material type for the same product. So the product and application go hand in hand.
Absolutely. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but how does reclosable, flexible packaging help reduce the food waste and appeal to today's consumer from an eco-responsibility standpoint, a food waste standpoint, a recyclability standpoint?
So the reclosable has a couple features to it. One thing is when you add reclosable, you're talking about multiple use. And right now, let's say if you get a single-use package, you're using a lot of package for a one-time use. As you add more product to have multiple use, you're not adding as much flexible material. So you actually reduce the per count or per serving, the amount of packaging drops off drastically. So having that zipper in there or that closing feature adds to the number of uses and actually reduces the amount of packaging that is out in the marketplace. The other benefit is once that package is open, that zipper does two things. One of it, it protects the product as far as any leakage of moisture out of the package, but also reduces the amount of effect of drying out the product or moisture protection from the outside of the package and extends that shelf life. So there's multiple benefits that zipper is doing within that package. Overall, the package, which has multiple servings, actually does use less flexible material.
And does it have any benefit when it comes to transport and then the ultimate, shelf stocking?
So when we look at transportation or product or how it's used, one of the things we look for is the application. For instance, let's talk about bulk pet food. Bulk pet food has to have a really high internal holding force on the product, because when that product tips over and such, there's a lot of hydraulic pressure in there, and that could go right through a seal or through a zipper. So on one side of the package, you want or have a really high holding force to keep the product in that application. But on the other side where the consumer is, you want a very nice experience where it's easy to get in the package. Mm. So the zipper's just not about opening and closing. There's a lot of other factors going into it. Holding force, consumer experience, audibles, a lot of different features. And we try to match those up to the application and the product. Those go hand in hand. And in high pressure pasteurization, even in those situations, we have to match the product with the application and the system. So all those things go hand in hand with each other.
And Vinicio, Gianni mentioned pet food, of course, and I know that that's another market in which HPP is now being utilized. Is that correct?
Yeah, sure. It's one of the perhaps the fastest growing markets within or sectors within the HPP industry. Just some years now of research that indicate that raw pet food diet has some health benefits for pets. Everything from oral digestion, the digestion, better or shinier fur, and other more energy. Obviously, it's a better treat, so they are more anxious or willing to have food, just as in our case that we like premium or better quality foods. So there are plenty of health benefits, but there are also hazards, microorganisms, pathogens such as E. coli, Listeria, that even though pets may be more resistant towards these microorganisms, but they can still get sick. And well, also if you have a little one over there, a kid or your grandparents over there, they're also more prone to get sick just because of cross-contamination. When you get some love by your pet, it can be transmitted through the saliva, through the tongue, through feces, if there are droppings in the backyard. If you actually maneuver these raw meats in the kitchen and do not have the adequate hygiene, there are some ways that you can transmit a foodborne pathogens. But and again, like in all other processing technologies, heating may take away some of the nutrients, some of the quality aspects, and that's where HPP comes into play. So it allows you to minimize the risk associated with these foodborne pathogens, but well, maximum retention in terms of protein content, the fat, carbohydrates such as fiber that are needed for the pet to meet the nutritional requirements. So you apply this for the minced meat along with the organs, veggies, dairy, whatever you need in order to meet the nutritional requirements, process them with the HEP and then refrigerate it, freeze it, or you can apply it as a previous step before freeze drying. So when you do this, you can turn it into kibbles, into patties, which are easier to maneuver or handle by pet parents and give to pets, but it's actually likable. And again, it's one of the fastest growing segments within the HPP industry.
Well, and aside from pet food, obviously, what other trends are you seeing in the HPP industry, and as it relates to refrigerated and frozen foods?
Oh, plenty. Well, some sectors like the juices, the ready-to-eat meats are well-established and continue to have a high volume or presence, which nearly 20 to 25% of the worldwide HP capacity is destined for these two sectors. But like in anything, well, the plant-based has diversified from the guacamole into hummus, which is the kind of the hot cold dip right now, with plenty of recipes. It has also extended towards dips based out of cashew, almonds, other grains. And we can see this further going. And again, it's going beyond the dips because you also have very complex ready meals following up with the plant-based trends that will have the rice, the cooked veggies, the sides, and maybe the main protein part, which can resemble the shape of a fillet, of a sausage, etc. You can also have ready meals, very complex, that have the animal protein along with the sides. And as people seek for convenience, for quick ways to have and enjoy meals, these two sectors are really growing fast.
And I wondered, how do you see the use of HPP evolving over the next, few years, few decades, as it becomes more established as a trusted method for treating food?
Again, just diversifying, because imagination is the ultimate limit here, and things that we thought that previously were not able to do, we are every time more capable of doing, such as again, try to simulate a fillet that is completely based out of plant products, and HPP, of course, provides the same benefits that right now some of these products are high in salt, high in chemical preservatives, and just like HPP paved the way for ready-to-eat meats, in the early 2000s, said that such can be the case. And when we touch a little base on pet food, there's also interest for seafood, and seafood, well, one of the either four dishes or one of the most visually impactful application, which is the recovery of the 100% edible meat portion of the meat from shellfish like oysters. Mm-hmm. Oysters can be shocking, can take a while, or and actually some dexterity to open the oyster without damaging it, and also to not puncture or damage your own hands with a sharp knife. In this case, well, the meat after HP just falls by itself, and right now with also with some of the crisis or kind of a shortage in terms of labor force, that can be a very good alternative for this industry. And well, I don't know, Giannis, if you want to touch some base on the meat side.
Let me add to that. Thank you. When we looked at, I talked about the last 30 years, and we went from additives to more natural products. The next kind of thing that's big on the consumer mind is sustainability. And there's a big push in all directions, from the consumer, from industrial companies and such. Yeah. And we're seeing a big shift in now, not only do they want natural products, but now they want sustainable endings. And part of that is the HPP process, which extends the shelf life, less waste, allows that product to be used over a longer period of time. Now we talk about the packaging it's actually going in, and that is going through a dramatic change right now. And with those changes, that is changing the way the film's manufactured, the type of structures, all that will have to blend with the type of technology like HPP, thermoforming and such as the markets move forward. And there's a lot of drive to have that done by 2025. So, there's a lot of work being done in that area, not only in flexible, but virtually all packaging. Mm-hmm. What is the type of sustainability? Is it going to be recycled? Is it going to be compostable? Is it going to be, truly carbon footprint? How much are you taking out of the environment? The number of trucks that you can reduce? All these things are being looked at, and a lot of pressure being in the marketplace to make those moves quickly. So that's going to impact not only how this product comes to market, but the way it's processed. Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the trends, I guess, if you could, Gianni, in a crystal ball, in 10 years, 20 years, in terms of packaging? I think one of the most interesting things I've learned this year is that, they're starting to make packaging out of actual plant-based materials. And yes, not just sort of the paper that people think of, but using all types of plant-based fibers to ultimately build packaging that can safely hold and transport food. So if you had a crystal ball, I wonder what the food packaging of the future might look like.
There's a lot of education that needs to occur, because people look at plastic is bad. And really, in many ways, plastic is very good, but you can't just call it plastic. There's a lot of materials. There's EVOH with a barrier property. There's PE, and there's OPEC. I mean, there's a lot of different structures that go into making a material that is just all thrown into plastic. Those materials themselves have, in many ways, extended product shelf life, improved overall health, and had a lot of benefits to it. What the consumer is asking, that's all great. Now we want it so that it can be renewable and reused over and over again. And what is going to drive that right now? Some of the limiting factors are we could come out with products that are renewable, but how do you get them to be renewable? What is the infrastructure built around that? And I think what's driving right now is they want the packaging to be renewable, and then the infrastructure behind that will be completed, so there's enough volume to drive this cost effectively. So what I see, if I looked at the crystal ball, is that the entire system is going to be in place, and it's going to be a cost-effective method to do it. If you say to the consumer, it costs a little more to be sustainable, they'll probably be okay with that. If you tell them, hey, we can be sustainable, but it's going to be five times what you pay today, they might not be able to do that. Right. So we're going to have to become a way to do it efficiently, a way for the consumer to effectively be able to deposit that product and get it into the stream to bring it back. That's where I see it going. If I look at the crystal ball, all those pieces will be there to do this effectively. right now, most of what we do that is recyclable ends up in a landfill anyways, because there's not a process in place to handle it. That is coming. So yeah, there's steps involved. Please.
Yes, if I may add that you mentioned about the infrastructure, that some of the plastics, be it in examples, already recyclable, but not the infrastructure and the culture of the people to separate. Like you just said, they think plastics is just everything is the same, but you actually have different types of materials that need to be segregated, and with the adequate structure can be recycled. And an example, we already have some different biopolymers in application, mainly for rigid packaging. In example, PLA, polylactic acid, it's currently being used by some companies because it has similar mechanical gas barrier properties as PET. It also degrades in a slower shorter time when compared to PET. And with the adequate design, it's viable to run with the HVP. Another example, it's a Vietnamese company, Tanfu Packaging, for flexible packaging, is a little bit more challenging because you have different layers of materials to provide mechanical properties, gas barrier properties, and separating them is what makes it difficult to recycle. But this Vietnamese company, Tanfu, they actually developed a way to process polyethylene. So with a single material, you can basically have a feel it, a touch as if it was paper, but it also has high barrier properties like EVOH, is strong or sturdy like nylon. So we shall see more of these type of examples going over the next years to cope with the goals of reducing plastic waste and sustainability.
Yeah, and to add to that, one of the things I'm seeing, or we're seeing in the industry, is where a recycled material might be PE, let's say a PE-based recycled material might be for a certain application, be able to be recycled. The same material in another application isn't because of the product itself and what's left behind from that product. Right. So everything, just because one application you can recycle and store recycle, another application may not be suitable for that. So you might have to come up with a different recyclable or a different compostable or sustainable method to deal with that product itself. Even though the materials may be similar for the application, the end result, how we deal with the packaging material, mm-hmm. and the product and the packaging systems might require a different sustainable method to a final reuse of that product.
And I wondered, Gianni, is the packaging industry facing any supply chain challenges currently?
I think everyone's facing supply chain issues. We definitely are from all aspects. I mean, as I look at, startups of new product lines and packaging lines, there's definitely delays because parts are being delayed. And I see it everywhere. If you talk about shipping, costs have gone up drastically, especially international. So that's making customers make changes, because where they might have brought in something from overseas, now it's not an option for them as far as cost, or just the length of time to bring it over might not be an option. So there's a lot of changes occurring because the infrastructure is unsettled at this point. And this is going to take a while to clean up. And I don't see that changing over in the short term. We deal with it every day, especially international. How do we keep products in place? We have done a lot of things where we bring it into, let's say, a warehouse overseas, so we have a backup plan. So there's a lot more strategy and things put in place to make sure that we can take care of customers. But yeah, there's a lot of infrastructure issues right now.
And I wondered how would a consumer be able to tell, or would they be able to tell when they're shopping that their product has undergone HPP treatment? Is there any way that a customer could tell? Is there any marking on the packaging, or is it just the type of product really that most hummus, most guacamole, things of that nature, you should assume have undergone HPP technology?
Sure. Well, like you just mentioned, there are some things that are actually pretty,
I was going to say, please start.
Oh, That's really well. That actually, some things that may be actually very obvious, like the guacamole, some of the green juices, when you see that shelf life or best used by date, it's well over a week. So it's very, very likely that it's HPP. Some customers, well, they do have their own marketing schemes or strategies. And there's also the Cold Pressure Council, which is an organization that aims to, well, kind of standardize the best practices within the HP industry, mm-hmm. and of course communicate to consumers with the benefits. So there's the option for members to make use of the logo, or companies to pay a fee, get audited to make sure that they are actually following certain guidelines. Of course, we don't just hand over the logo to anyone, but once they have been audited and accepted, well, they can incorporate this within the logo so that the consumers can actually easily discern or identify those foods that have been processed with the HPP.
And as far as, you know, for most packaging, consumers don't know that it's going through that process. They experience the benefits of it. You know, they see the guacamole is nice and green and it's not discolored. They look at the lunch meat and it's, you know, all natural, no additives. And they see that, well, this is a clean label. And they see that, but they don't understand what went behind the scenes to make that happen. And that's where, you know, the HPP is kind of the silent partner here. They're bringing those values to the consumer, but the consumer is just experiencing the benefits of it. But most of the times they don't understand, you know, most customers don't understand what occurred. Now, experts like us in packaging and such, we go to the store, we say, oh, this must have been processed this way, or this was processed this way. Well, but you know, for the general consumer, they have the experience, they buy the product. If they have a good experience, they buy it again. And if they, and that's what they're looking for. And overall, you know, that process that, you know, of HPP and such has made that experience positive, especially in guacamole and some of the natural products.
Well, is there anything else that either one of you would like to discuss today or think our listeners should know about HPP or packaging?
To me, I think, you know, we kind of covered this, you know, a lot of different things. I think a lot of changes are still going to come, especially as regulations within the governments change, as far as requirements and packaging. The consumer themselves are very focused on more sustainable, the environment. That's going to drive a lot of change. So, you know, I think the number of changes that occurred over the, my last 30 years, I think even more are going to occur in the next five. The market has changed, the consumer has changed, and we have to follow that. Because if you don't follow it, you don't meet their requirements, you won't be in the market long. So a lot of changes occurring, and a lot of, you know, new things are developing. So very excited about what's happening in the marketplace.
Yeah, sure. Well, again, there's a kind of high demand for going from the shelf-stable aisle towards the refrigerated or frozen aisles, and HPP is going to play an integral role, again, with established markets, juices, avocado, meats, and we shall see a diversity of ready meals, baby food, which is also one of the growing applications, plant-based, and again, as part of the challenges that Jenny just touched base, try to define some of the guidelines, so that in terms of regulations, as of now, if you want to go into the market with HP, you must go through a laboratory to demonstrate that HP effectively kills the pathogens or whatever your food safety objective is. And hopefully in the future, we can see some of these guidelines that can save time and money for companies that are looking to have new applications into the market.
Vinicio and Gianni, thank you again for joining me on From the Cold Corner. For the latest in all things frozen and refrigerated foods, visit rffmag.com.